Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're going to have a long wrestling career, the past has told us you may have a short period where things don't click. This is mainly due to the fact that sports entertainment never ends. So if you are appearing on a show every week for every year, nobody has that kind of batting average. Doesn't mean you can't secure yourself a legendary overall run. Here's some weird periods certain old-timers would like you to forget. Number 10, Kane in 2007. So I will die on this hill, although I do understand it. Kane should never have taken the mask off. I suppose he had to, but my thoughts don't have to make sense. The magic of that character was sort of lost. This was really reflected in 2007 when WWE didn't know what to do with the guy. Hence, we got to WrestleMania 23, and he was put in a feud with the great Khali. One of these few occasions where a sentence rhymes, but it's still bad. As we know, the Great One wasn't the most mobile, so it was the Big Red Machine who had to take the punishment and the selling. That's just silly. See No Evil was also in cinemas, so the hook from the movie was brought into proceedings, but that made the whole thing even stranger. Now they were actually trying to kill each other. Big Daddy V was up next, and he too suffered from the exact same issue. So once more, Kane was the person just getting his ass whooped. This is not the way. When you do go through the whole year, this is what WWE kept doing too. Maybe because it was a calling card of fake brother The Undertaker at one point. I mean, go through his earlier Mania matches. It was always, how on earth can he defeat somebody so much bigger? This was sort of wild, however, because all of the Dead Man's matches were better with smaller opponents. It should have been what we did with Kane too. You really don't need to watch much of what the Big Red Machine did in 2007, and it's not even his fault. He's just placed in an impossible situation. Number 9, Ric Flair in 2001 and 2002. I quite like Ric Flair coming into the WWE and being the secret new owner of the company. It was a nice way to remind you that Flair was the man, but behind the scenes, yeah, something was brewing. Triple H had been very vocal about how lacking in confidence Ric was during this time, mostly because WCW had chewed him up and spat him out. Now, even a Flair at 50% was still better than most, but it did show in his work, as it would for anyone. Ric felt like he had lost the magic, so sort of skulked around the place, scared of his own shadow. Let's not pretend that we haven't all been there. It's one of the reasons Hunter did get him into Evolution as the legendary veteran so they could restore faith in himself. The difference is noticeable on TV. Before long, he felt like the old Ric Flair. And from there, everything was far better. Some may say the current Ric is in a similar situation, but this is totally different. He's like a 75-year-old man now. When you bring that into the chat, yeah. Kind of makes sense why this would be the way. Number 8, The Big Show in 2003. While Vince McMahon would profess to know exactly what to do with WCW's giant before he signed Paul White, it turned out this was all hot air. As soon as he did debut in the WWF as The Big Show, it was the same old thing, and any chat of being used as a special attraction was thrown out the window. It meant there was a lot of back and forth, especially because management was insistent they couldn't push him properly until he lost weight. So when we got to 2003, there were less ideas than ever. Seems odd as you're dealing with a huge man in wrestling. Sometimes things are too obvious and you forget. He did kick off the year as the world champion and ended it with the United States title, but everything in between was a head-scratcher. Show did have a feud with The Undertaker and Brock Lesnar, which had their moments, but by the end of each, it felt like he lost more steam. I mean, he wasn't gaining anything from it. The ring-breaking spot with Brock will remain an all-timer, but as 2004 rolled around, there was even some talk that the powers that be were having second thoughts. There's no one today who can say the Big Show didn't have a Hall of Fame career when all was said and done, but times like these were confusing. He's massive, just let him tonk people. number 7, Triple H in 1996. I suppose the best way to sell this one is that look what Triple H was within 5 years. Exactly. When he did join the WWF in the mid-90s, though, ridiculous gimmicks were in. Therefore, he was introduced as Hunter Hearst Helmsley, a Greenwich Blue blood who thought he was better than you because he was rich. Alright then. In 1996, however, I'm not sure the company knew what they were going to do with him, because he was feuding with the likes of Duke the Dumpster Drozzy, and got wrecked by the Ultimate Warrior at that year's WrestleMania. He also had to have a hogpen match with Henry Godwin. I mean, none of this was good. It wouldn't be until October when a program with Mark Mero for the Intercontinental title heated things up. From there, it was D-Generation X. You know the rest. But for a good few months there, it looked like Triple H was going to be totally lost as he fought with The Stalker, Freddie Joe Floyd, and Savio Vega. There's nothing against those guys. They just so happened to be pegged at a lesser level. Number 6, Stone Cold Steve Austin in 2002. We talked about this in the mega ups and downs I did for WrestleMania, and it just stands out like a sore thumb. Despite all his success, the WWE had no clue what to do with Steve Austin in 2002. This really is underlined when you watch his match with Scott Hall at WrestleMania 18, because it's just a lot of nothing. Part of this was to do with Hall's personal issues, with the finish even being changed, because management wasn't convinced they could rely on Scott. It's also why Kevin Nash doesn't do much of anything on the outside. The second half of the year was even worse, as Stone Cold was so down on creative he walked out of the company. But actually, this wasn't a massive shock. From January to this point, it felt like the Rattlesnake had feuded with everyone, the heel turn hadn't gone as we thought, and Steve didn't want to work with Hulk Hogan. Didn't trust him. It all imploded when Austin went on The Bite this show and very legitimately aired his grievances against his storytelling. He was then told to lose to Brock Lesnar. We know the rest. It is such a shame, as it feels like a lost period of Steve's career these days, but either way, not like the rest wasn't all time. It absolutely was.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Number 5, Daniel Bryan in 2011. Yes, I know. 2011 is when Daniel Bryan won the Money in the Bank briefcase and became the World Heavyweight Champion. That was great, but always will be. The issue was WWE sort of just did this and then forgot. I am not kidding. It all began at the start of the year when Bryan was the United States champion, but you know the deal there. Any mid-card title was ignored. They'd lost all their charm. It didn't get defended until Mania, when he lost it to Sheamus, and when he won the briefcase, if word is to be believed, it was actually a last-minute decision to try and surprise the fans. He subsequently lost to Cody Rhodes, Sin Cara, and Wade Barrett. 2 weeks before he cashed in, he lost in 120 seconds to Alberto Del Rio. There was no interference either. He got wrecked. The Money in the Bank win did give us some hope, but yeah, Daniel was the champion in name only, because WWE had no clue what they had. It was going to take him a good few years to find out too. Number 4, Randy Orton in 2015. Randy Orton is a Hall of Famer. He is way better than most people give him credit for, but he's been going so long he falls foul to this curse more than most. Some years, WWE just shrugged their shoulders. 2015 started out okay as he feuded with The Authority before beating Seth Rollins at Mania with one of the best RKOs of all time. The thing is, who was standing tall by the end of the night? The technical loser of that match. It did mean he was the first contender for this title, but he was not victorious. Then he was back to fighting Sheamus, even though he had recently feuded with Sheamus. We sort of meandered from there until Randy very sadly hurt his shoulder. And while you never want anyone to get injured, there was an upside to this. Going away from TV for a while meant when he returned, he felt super fresh again. Even then, though, the Jinder Mahal thing happened. I think sometimes WWE takes Orton for granted. Hopefully never again. Number 3, Becky Lynch in 2017. Becky Lynch is one of the most popular wrestlers around right now. People pretend this isn't true. That's nonsense. It's been quite the rise, because there was once this idea she was the fourth out of the four horsewomen when they were making noise, but this was mostly because WWE wasn't taking advantage of what they had. Do you remember that tag team with Naomi? It was just so random. Becky did become the first ever SmackDown Women's Champion, but it was another one of these title crownings where we didn't treat it properly. She soon lost it to Alexa Bliss, and then, yep, did nothing. Now, it actually turned out for the best because Lynch would use this in her promos when she was becoming the man, but the fact you have a whole year when she was persona non grata is just so damn short-sighted. It is all there, though. She did get overlooked for many opportunities. When WWE tried to turn her heel and the audience rejected it, we all knew she ruled. To Goldberg in 2003. Well, we all know this. WWE knows it. Bill knows it. The fans knew it. It was so obvious. We just didn't use Goldberg as Goldberg. Instead, the powers that be decided we had to WWE the WCW legend, which meant longer matches. Problem was, nobody wanted to see that. We just wanted the wrecking machine we got a couple of years before this. Dudes like Lance Storm and Rosie got ran through, but as soon as Bill was put in any program that featured a top star, it all got extended. The average Goldberg pay-per-view match in 2003 was 14 minutes. I mean, come on. Off his aura alone, he still became the world champion, but it was all such a struggle due to the above. WWE just didn't get it, and then they put him in a wig. This was dumb, and 9 times out of 10 I love dumb. This wasn't it. His return in 2016 was the way to do it, and it only took management 13 years to realize this. Whoops, number one, the Undertaker post-streak. So this is one for the debating team. Was the Undertaker's loss at WrestleMania 30 the turning point of his WrestleMania career? It certainly took away from his magic at the show of shows for obvious reasons, because any Mania match after this just wasn't as fun. I mean, at Mania 31, he faced Bray Wyatt, which was a double-edged sword, because nobody wanted to see Taker lose back-to-back, but we also wanted Wyatt to win. This is not an ideal scenario. 32 was Shane McMahon and 33 was Roman Reigns, a match even the dead man has said should have been better. 34 was Cena was super fun, but also kind of just there. He wasn't even on 35, didn't turn up. 36 was the Boneyard match, which was excellent as a goodbye, but I do get this. It was always going to happen for the obvious reasons. As soon as the streak was over at WrestleMania, the Undertaker became just another guy. So my word. That's something to get into. Pens at the ready, go.